ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। On this 31st day of May 2013 in Los Angeles, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Verse Number 5. Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, swāmini āśiṣa, Atmanaha, Swaminyashisha Asmanaha, Atmanaha, Naswami, Brityataha, Swamyam, Naswami, Brityata, Swamyam, Itchan, Yo, Ratichashishaha, Itchan, Yo, Ratichashishaha, Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchanyo rātichāśiṣah, Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchanyo ratichāśiṣah, Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchanyo ratichāśiṣah. Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchanyo ratichāśiṣah. Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchan, Icchanyo rātichā. Ladies? Navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam. Ladies? Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchanyo ratichāśiṣah. Āśāsāno navāya vṛtyah, Swāminyāśiṣa ātmanah, Na svāmi vṛtyatak svāmyam, Icchanyo ratichāśiṣah. Āśāsānah. A person who desires in exchange for service, na not, by indeed. Mrityaha, a qualified servant or pure devotee of the Lord. Swamini, from the Master. Ashishaha, material benefit. Atmanaha, for personal sense gratification. Na, nor. Swami, the Master. Mrityataha, from the servant. Swamyam, the prestigious position of being the Master. Itchan, desiring. Yaha, any such Master who. Rati, bestows. Cha, also. Ashishaha, material profit. Translation: a servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. Please repeat. A servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20, Kamais tais tair rita gyana prapadyante nyadevataha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. Close quote. A demigod cannot become master, for the real master is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods, to keep their prestigious positions, bestow upon their worshippers whatever benedictions the worshippers want. For example, once it was found that an asura took a benediction from Lord Shiva by which the asura would be able to kill someone simply by placing his hands on that person's head. Such benedictions are possible to receive from the demigods. If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, the Lord will never offer him such condemned benedictions. On the contrary, it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyaham anugrinnami harishye tad dhananshanai. If one is too materialistic, but at the same time wants to be a servant of the Supreme Lord, the Lord, because of his supreme compassion for the devotee, takes away all his material opulences and obliges him to be a pure devotee of the Lord. Balad Maharaj distinguishes between the pure devotee and the pure master. The Lord is the pure master, the supreme master, whereas an unalloyed devotee with no material motives is the pure servant. One who has materialistic motivations cannot become a servant, and one who unnecessarily bestows benedictions upon his servant to keep his own prestigious position is not a real master. Om Gyanatamarandrasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very important exchange between Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisimhadev. I look back at some of the teachings of Prahlad. These are actually very significant chapters. Most of this, a good part of this canto is the story of Prahlad Maharaj. And in this section of what Prahlad learned in the womb, it's described there, he has a verse at the end of those instructions that begins with the phrase, Etavani Viloke Smin. And there's quite a few verses in the Bhagavatam that begin with this phrase. And what this phrase means and what the words Etavan means is kind of, now listen up, I'm summarizing what I just said before. This is a very important instruction. It kind of, there's several verses like that. So in that, verse, he says, Etava Avalokitesmin Pungsa Swarta Paraksmataha Ekanta Bhakti Govinde Yat Sarvatra Tarikshanam. That Etava Avalok, in this world of human beings, the real, for a human being, the best thing to achieve is Swarta. And we're going to come back to this phrase because this is very important. Swarta. What is the Swarta? What is the real need of the soul? That's what that word means. That phrase means this. Ekanta Bhakti Govinde. One-pointed, unalloyed devotion unto Govinda. By which one can see him everywhere. Now this is kind of a theme throughout Prahlad Maharaj's pastimes. Is that he saw Krishna everywhere. He was always conscious of Krishna within and without. And he felt completely protected and at peace, no matter what his father was doing. He was certainly not tempted by any of the emoluments that his father offered him. His father basically offered him the whole universe. Prahlad was meant to be trained to be the next king of the universe as a demon. But he wanted none of that. He was already trained in the womb as a pure devotee, right? A pure devotee means he wants nothing material. I was remembering several verses that describe that. And one of them is in the 11th canto, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita. And he says, Napadaveshtyam namahindra dishnyam, nasavabomam narvasadipatyam, na yoga siddhir opunavavancha, mayapitapnechati madvinanyat. For one who has completely absorbed in thought of me, my arpitatma means the consciousness is completely absorbed in me, and that's Prahlad. Prahlad is the emblem. He's the exemplar for meditation, being completely absorbed in thought of Krishna. Right. So for one who is in that mentality, they don't want a whole. There's a whole list of things they don't want. They don't want the position of Brahma or a residence in Brahmaloka. They don't want to be Indra or to get a place in Indraloka. They don't want a sovereignty, an empire on this earth or in the lower planets. They don't want the perfections of yoga, those eight cities, which are so attractive. And they don't want even release from birth and death. Opunarbhavangcha. Opunarbhavang means not coming back. And what do they want? Only me. Madvinanyat. Itchati madvinanyat. I mean, they only want me and nothing else. This is the emblem of the pure devotee. They cannot be tempted. The mind cannot be diverted for one split second from meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna. This is described in the Navi Yogendras when they're describing the qualities of the pure devotee, of the different levels of devotees versus the Mahabhagavat. Again, he sees Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. That's the emblem of the Mahabhagavat. Sarvabhuteshayak prasheed Bhagavad Bhava Mahashanda. And then at the end of that chapter, he continues to describe, or the end of that section, a lesson from the Yogendras, he continues to describe the qualities of the Mahabhagavat. And the first verse is very wonderful. It has the meter, the Bhishma's meter, Bhishma's prayers. It says, Tribhuvana vibhavaheta vepa kunta smidhuta jitama sudhati bhivam rigyat nachalati bhagavat padada vinda lavanda mishadha vabhiyaksa vaishnavagya. So what this means is that Tribhuvana vibhavaheta vepa, for the sake of all of the wealth in all three worlds. Just imagine what that, how much that is. All the Brahmaloka, Indraloka, Jnanaloka, Tapaloka, everything there. The subterranean heavenly planets. Fort Knox, the lottery. You know, that isn't even one little smidgen. For the sake of all of that, the pure devotee will not agree to forget the lotus feet of Krishna for one split second. you might think, well, you know, we're having trouble remembering Krishna moment after moment. So wouldn't it be worthwhile, you know, you forget for one second, then you can then you remember, and you can use all that wealth in the service of Krishna. We may have so many ideas. But no, they wouldn't agree to that because, number one, they're experiencing release from any type of misery from there. That's in the next verse. It's just like the moonshine emanating from the toenails of the lotus feet of the Lord. This is very important. This effulgence emanating from those jewel-like toenails is completely soothing, just like moonshine. It describes it in that verse like you're in a desert. You know, we're living near a desert. If you go east a little ways, I live in San Diego, you're in the middle of a desert, right? So it's summertime's coming. So imagine you're stuck in the desert all day. Somehow you find some shade under the rock, you know, and you survive, you know. You're like exhausted from the heat, you know. But then at nighttime, the moon comes up, the full moon, and the soothing light of the moon gives you so much relief. So similarly, these threefold miseries, they're said the tapa tehena, tapa, they're burning. The misery is coming from the body and the mind. The misery is coming from other people or other living entities in general. The divas, acts of God, they call them in the insurance policy. Oh, you know, in Florida, they have these fissures open up. You're sitting at home watching TV. It happened to some guy. Suddenly the whole thing fell apart. Big hole developed. What do they call it? A sinkhole. And he disappeared. It happens. You know? But the insurance policy says, oh, it's an act of God. Sorry, we didn't insure against that. So these are the act of the gods, right? The diver. So that's miseries is coming all the time. The drought, you know, this grinding drought in the Midwest, I was reading, they're exhausting the aquifers. You know, the slow motion disaster. The big, you know, belt of fertile land that, you know, they're growing all this corn and everything, and gradually it's drying up, you know. Or it's suddenly the sandy comes and wipes out, you know, so many houses and people have to move and everything wrecked. It's coming all the time. And so, okay, we're good. You know, there's nothing happening right now. But what about your own body and mind? There's so many people just in this country. Half of the people are taking antidepressants, you know, because it's such a difficult world to live in. You know, financial anxiety, love life anxiety, you know, am I beautiful enough? What about my grades? What about the debt that I owe? From, you know, so many anxieties. And so, you know, the person looks normal, they're just walking down the street, but their own body and mind, the anxiety is causing so much pain. Or other people, you know. I always point out, I remember this one phrase from a play by Jean-Paul Sartre. I think I've spoken of it before. It was called No Exit. And this was the conclusion of that play. Hell is other people. Hell is other people. This was his conclusion. You know, what a depressing thought, you know. I mean, it's true if it's materialist, but in the association of devotees, it's better than heaven, right? So, but the idea is that these are always burning. You're always burning in those. But if you're always absorbed in the thought of Krishna beyond the bodily platform, they're all dependent on the bodily concept of life. That false ego is what puts us into the fire of the threefold miseries. If we can transcend that and come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, it means that you're no longer suffering as much from these threefold miseries. This is spoken by Kapila Dev also. So, Prahlad was certainly at that point. He proved it. He was thrown into the vat of oil. They threw him off the cliff. They tried to crush him with elephants. Right? Every way you can imagine, poison. Not only wasn't he killed, but he wasn't disturbed. He wasn't disturbed by that. This is an incredible yogic power, and his father was scared because of that yogic power. He didn't understand it. So, with all of that, you know, it's obvious that he's not going to ask for some material benediction. And he more or less complains here. He says, why are you tempting me? Remember the first, why are you tempting me with this? And he says, take any benediction you want. Right? You can go into three worlds, you can have it. You know, whatever like that. So Prahlad has this little, lesson here that he gives it in greater detail to his friends. Because his friends are all born in demonic families. They're being trained, just like everyone's being trained out there, to think only of, you know, what's in it for me? How can I benefit from this business? This is Vanik. This is the capitalist system. The market economy. Right? Is that there's no mercy anymore, right? Apple, you know? I'm sitting here with an Apple product, it's true. But the point is that, you know, these companies, they have no heart. They have only one reason for being, to make more money. And if they can hide $50 billion of taxes offshore, they do that, which they did. If they have to employ people in Bangladesh, in you know, rickety buildings with, so they collapse and 1,000 people get killed. Oh, we're so sorry, you know. They don't want to look bad. But really, it'll go on like that. Because there's no heart. See? This is the whole, and everyone picks up on that. This is what's going on in society. So Prahlad's teaching to his friends was exactly opposite to that. He was telling them how this just leads to suffering. That this endeavor for our own happiness, material happiness, either physical, emotional, financial, whatever you may have in mind, you know, simply leads to the opposite. Dukaushadam tadapi dukkam atadhyaham. Wonderful line from his prayers, which we read in the last chapter. Dukaushadam tadapi dukkam atadhyaham. What it means is that your remedy for the misery, and really search for sense gratification is also an attempt to relieve the misery of wanting something that you don't have, right? So he says that simply produces more dukkha. The remedy for the dukkha produces more dukkha. And all because atadhyaham, a little phrase, think about it, means I'm thinking I'm something I'm not. Atadhyaham, namely this body. This is what he's teaching. So Prahlad already understood that. So these are all the things he doesn't want. And here he's saying that a real servant must be without any motivation other than to please the master. What is that? Bhavandame maanachadandadantadak prashantanikshe samanodatankadak kadahamaikantitinittikinkara paharshiyasyami sanata jivatam. Prabhupada would quote this verse. It's quoted in the CC. In the beginning of, you know, the teaching of the different rasas, this is the perfect mood of the servant. From the Stotra Ratna by Yamunacharya. So here, Prahlad is emblematic of the perfect servant. It says, Bhavantam evanucharan nirantara. When will I be your servant without any gap? Evanucharan nirantara. Prashanta. And that will pacify all of the manoratantara, the manorata, the chariot of the mind. Is always taking us this way, that way, this way. Where's the pleasure? How can I get away from the suffering? Where's the pleasure? This is the manorata. But this is pacified, prashanta, an endless nikshesa manodatantara. Life after life, the mind, the material mind, is keeping us on this chariot, looking here, looking there, for safety and for pleasure. But he says, if I just become your kinkara, your menial servant, you know, sincerely, then that chariot of mine will stop. It will become pacified. Kadaham, when or when will this day be mine? Kadaham I come to kanitya kinkara? Will I be your one-pointed servant, meaning only thinking of your benefit? And I'll be jubilant, paharshi isyami sanata jivatam, to have such a wonderful master, sanata jivatam. This is sometimes used for in the Veda culture for ladies who get married. Oh, now they have a master. Now they can live happily. So similarly, we cannot live happily without Krishna as our master. We've accepted so many other masters, and the illusion is that we're the master, but actually we're always the servant. We're serving the demands of the lust, of the anger, of the illusion, the boss, the child, the husband, the boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. You know, the body just gives so many demands. Right? So we're always the servant. The question is, can we redirect, or how can we redirect that service attitude to that real master who is only our master for our benefit, who has no material motive himself? Here, Prahlad is giving a definition of unqualified servants and unqualified masters. The servant, you know, just like you go to the service station, now, of course, it's all self-serve. But when we grew up, right, they would come out and wipe your windshield. You know, can I fill her up? Yeah, fill her up, you know, and you'd feel, oh, I'm being served here, right? You remember those days? Now you have to pay, you know, a higher percentage. Now, I don't even, is it even available? Do they even have that anymore? But, huh? The New Jersey you can get. Or, you know, you go to a restaurant and the waiter is there. Oh, I'm being served. Yeah, right. And if you don't leave enough tip, you know, then they'll probably throw the plate at you as you go out the door. They don't care for you. It's all an illusion. It's all simply an illusion. It's simply a game they're playing to try to think. And the advertisements, You know, come and be happy, buy this thing. You know, it's on sale. We're not making any profit. You'll be happy by buying this. You know. Come to Disneyland, you know. And the whole thing is simply a game. It's just totally demonic to entice your mind as don't tempt me, you know, Prahlada is saying. Well, the pure devotee cannot be tempted because the flow of devotion in his heart is always giving him so much pleasure and there's no misery. So if you're always experiencing the highest pleasure and you're not feeling any misery, then what can they provide? What can anyone tempt you with? You see? It's impossible. You're already there. We're allured because we're never satisfied in material consciousness. So, and then the master, the so-called master, now here he's talking about the demigods, but we're confronted with so many masters, right? Who we depend on. I'm thinking of like the DMV. Every so often, you have to go down there, get online, you know, in order to renew your registration or renew your license, whatever it may be. And, you know, there's all of these petty bureaucrats there. And you have to come there and do whatever they say. They're the master, right? If you don't do it, you won't get your registration. You may get a ticket, you know. So that's exactly what the demigods are like. They're doing their service not because they care about you, but because they need to maintain their position. If they don't do it, they get fired. But it looks like, oh yes, how can we help you? Can I help you? You know? Yeah, sure. And they set up, because what's really attractive is this real loving exchange. So there's all kinds of perverted reflections in this world of this real service, this care. What's actually attractive to the living entity and what's attractive to the Lord is love, is when things are given out of care and everything is meant to be simply a vehicle for expressing that love. Just like you have the deity worship, right? So now he's doing the chamara, right? It's going on right now. Now, are there really any bugs on there that need to be swept away, you know? Maybe not. Maybe not. But the point is, it goes on because it gives an opportunity to express the care. Being on time, being clean, dressing, all of that is giving us an opportunity to express our devotion and to become purified. So what is Krishna giving back? Himself. He's standing there, beautiful, smiling. That smile, that beauty that he's displaying to us is the gift that he's giving to us, the most valuable thing. And you become sensitized, or you become qualified to appreciate that beauty and that reciprocation to the degree that you're actually serving Krishna selflessly. So the whole thing is simply exchange. In the spiritual world, it's exactly the opposite. Nobody is in it for themselves. Krishna's also not in it for, he's also reciprocating with the loving desire of his devotees to please them. The coward boys want to please Krishna by playing with him and joking with him and teasing him, and you know. And he reciprocates perfectly. He's in that perfect mood. And so it's just a loving exchange. There's no selfishness. There's no karma at all. Same thing with the gopis. It's completely pure. They want to serve him how he wants to be served. He wants to allow them to enable that. And so he appears in that mood. So that's the actual nature of spiritual life. And Prahlada, now it's interesting that in a few verses, and I can't resist because we're only two verses hence, there's a very important verse where Prahlada does ask a benediction. He does ask a benediction. And that benediction is that I'll have no material desires. Yadi dasasi me kamans vadang strung vadadarshaba kamanam vidisangroham bhavatas tu vinevaram. So this word varam comes in again and again. Not a bar. We say yasramati nandana braja bara. That's bara, bara. That's the B and the V is sometimes exchanged. It means the best. It means something that you want. It means a benediction, a boon that you're asking for. You see? So here he says, okay, well, you want to offer me something? Then here's my prayer. Oh, best of the givers of benediction, Vadadarshaba. That in my heart, there will never awaken, will never take root, it literally take root, any material desire. This is the best of your benedictions. Now again, this is kind of a negative benediction. Okay, this is what I don't want. Please give me the absence of this. So what do we want? Well, we have the every year we sing here the Damodarashtaka. Vadam deva mokshanda mokshavadimva nachanjam vaneham varesharapiha idam deva purnata gopala badam sadame manasyam virastam kimanyai. So this is a prayer, right? He's praying. It's not that devotees don't want anything. It's that we don't want anything material. So then we need to know what, you know, how to desire properly. So this is one of the verses that teaches us. So, oh Lord, I don't want, again, he's listing what he doesn't want. No moksha, I don't want liberation. I don't even want to go to Vaikuntha. I simply want to have this beautiful Bal Gopal form of yours manifest in my heart forever. And this would be, what else, what use are any other benedictions? This is the mood of a pure devotee. So we need to learn how to pray. Lord Chaitanya taught us, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Vajikadishakami. Mama janmani janmani shade bhavada bhakta dahoita kita. This is the prayer. Now, we may think, well, I'm not at that level. I do need some money. I do need some of these other things. So should I still utter this prayer? Yes. We need to just as we chant, it's not that we have to become pure before you chant. If we didn't, then none of us would chant. But the chanting itself of the holy name is itself the purification process, as well as are the repetition and the adoption of these prayers of these great devotees, just like Prahlad, or Satyavraja Muni, or of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's teaching us. Queen Kunti, she's saying the same thing, right? Trahime nanni vishaya mati madhupate sakrit ratamunva hatara dha gange vaugumadandati. Now she just asked Krishna to cut off all of her attachment for her sons, taking the role of a conditioned soul, a mother, you know, said, well, you know, I want to love you. This is her, you know, she's taking this role, just like Prahlad does sometimes, with pure devotion. So, right now, there's some still attraction on the material side for my children and also the whole dynasty. Cut that off. Please cut that off. Just as Prahlad says, please, no material desire. Then what do you want? Oh, you know, Omadhava. Oh, Madhu's Lord, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of Thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to Thee. This is a prayer. You know? So, I was just reading yesterday in the restaurant, Civilization and Transcendence. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. Wonderfully edited, by the way, by our godbrother, Jagajivan Prabhu. And you know, one of the classic knocks, if you will, against Hinduism is that it's fatalistic. Right? Well, look, we know we're scheduled, as it says right in the Bhagavatam, that we're scheduled to get a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of distress. So it's already programmed in. So why should I work hard? Whatever comes, it comes. Whatever comes, it comes. You know? So this is kind of fatalistic. It's exactly against the Protestant ethic. Work hard as you can, accumulate money, you know, and then you'll get the blessings of the Lord. And the proof of the blessings are that I'm rich. You see? And they actually think like that, as opposed to Jesus Christ teaching, says to help the poor. Oh, they're sinful because they're poor. See, it's so crazy. So that fatalism has become famous, so that's, you can't have that. So in India, you know, work is worship. Work hard. You know, that's your worship. Don't go to the temple and just think that karma is going to, you know. Like, but don't forget. But the thing is, yes, we want to work hard. But not for material things. The point is that it's not that, well, whatever will come, and therefore, why should I work? No. Right at the beginning of Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is teaching. What should we strive for? What should we aspire for? So he says there, what is that? Oh, God. Tasyaiva heto prayadeta kovido nalabhide yad brahmadama parayata talabhide dukkavadanya taksukum kalaina sarvata gabhira rangasa. Prahlad says a similar thing with dukkavadanya. So he says, one should prayateta, not just yateta, but prayateta means one should strive like anything. The most important thing in one's life. You have to strive for what you cannot get going up and down this material world. Well, You know, but as far as dukkha and sukha come, they're going to come on their own. The sukha will come on its own just like the dukkha comes. Prabhupada makes this point over and over. You don't go out there and try to get unhappiness. No one plans to have an accident or get sick or any of the other miseries that come. They come on their own, despite all of our efforts. Similarly, the happiness will come without your striving for it and thinking about it and obsessing over it. So let it come. That's where the fatalism comes in. But notice the first part of the verse. Strive for what you can get, namely pure devotion. Krishna. Strive for Krishna. He's beyond the bounds of this material world. And that's why, you know, the devotees are always working hard, you know. And people think, oh, you're also doing the same thing we're doing. But it's not the same because the motivation is different. And because it's being done, should be done, we should strive for that, to be done with the pure motive, simply to please Krishna. It's like the chanting of Hare Krishna. This is our basic service. Without that, all of this seems crazy. But with that, this seems sane, and that's crazy. So, what happens when we chant? Well, the mind is fighting us, generally, unless we're pure devotees. Memories, this and that, distractions, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, I've been trying this. There's various ways of trying to improve the focus of the mind, right? And one of the ways that I thought is that, okay, I'm chanting this holy name, and I know that it's non-different from Krishna. We know that, right? At this point, it's theoretical. We may not have realized it, but I know that. That's a bit of gyan coming from the Shastra. No question about it. So, what will please this holy name? Right? It's Krishna. Well, if I chant, if I hear all the syllables, if I hear it nicely and chant nicely, and if I remember that it's non-different from Krishna. So with that thought, you chant. Chant the holy name for the pleasure of the holy name. Or chant the Hare Krishna mantra with the prayer. Oh, my dear Lord, my mind is so restless. It's just, you know, chanchalam himana Krishna is go here and there. Please, you know, give me the strength to hear your holy name. As you chant, you can pray to Krishna for that. You see what I'm saying? The what you don't want is that the mind is going this way and the fingers and the voice is going this way. You need to have some way of, now ideally you just hear and chant. The content of your thought is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. That's the ideal, right? But it's not so easy to do that for more than one or two mantras. So anyway, the idea is that we're certainly not chanting for something material. Now that we have to be careful, but that's what we're learning here. But we can chant for everything, for pure devotion, and anything that leads to pure devotion. Just like so many prayers are there, Vritrasura comes to mind. Beautiful prayer. Just imagine the scene. Bhagavatam is full of these incredible scenes. This one is also. There's, you know, Shringadev. The bodies are everywhere. The blood is everywhere. You know, and Prahlad is there. It's very dramatic. So this is Vritrasura is about to get killed by Indra. And he reveals his real nature. He's not an asura at all. He's Chitraketu. So he's praised. Aham hare tava paraika mula. Dasana dasa pavitasmi bhuya. Manaksmade tasu pade gunanti gunita vakarma karotu kaya. Wonderful verse. He says, oh my lord, aham hare tava paraika mula. When will I again have the association of your devotees who are fixed at your lotus feet? Paraika mula dasana dasa. When will I become the servant of the servants, of your servant? And bhavitasmi bhuya. When will it happen again? Because then in that association, manaksmade sattu pade, oh lord of my life, you know, he's thinking of Krishna, Vishnu. My mind will be able to think of your qualities. My voice will always chant your glories. And my senses will always do your work. Very simple prayer, you know. We can adopt these prayers. And because prayer means that you're articulating some desire. See, so this whole passage is what I don't want. I don't want anything material from this service. I'm not doing business with Krishna. Now, you know, and the danger is we can fall into that. I think I mentioned this word yesterday. to for Ghosh Prabhu. Wonderful class. And simony or simony. Simony is a word that means using sacred things to make material profit out of it. You know? It's always, there's always that temptation. Because when you serve Krishna, just see. You know, Prabhupada was, you know, he started from nothing. You know, Krishna showed, used Prabhupada as a lesson. He quotes it in his purport, Yasyahamanagunami Hadashaita Dananshanai, that if I really show my mercy to someone, I gradually take away all his wealth. You know? And the rest of the verse says, and then his family doesn't like him anymore and they kick him out. You bum. You know. and so then what? Oh, you have no other shelter. Just, you know. So Prabhupada actually, you know, he used himself as an example. As a fact, he tried to make that business go, you know, and it never worked. He was ripped off by a relative, wasn't it, I think? And eventually it didn't work. So, of course, Prabhupada was nichasiddha, he was sent down. But he's showing an example he's giving. You know, that's the example he's giving. So, Krishna is not going to give us things that are going to make us want more material things. But still, if we're not careful, because we're not pure devotees, we can allow those material desires to again rise in the heart. Just see, as I was saying, Prabhupada was given everything. Multi-millions. Thousands of devotees who were ready to do whatever he wanted at his beck and call. You know? And yet, you know, why was he given it? Because he didn't want it materially. He wanted it for Krishna. So all the money, printed books. Ramaswamy was telling, you know, the story. How the money was coming into the BBT. Prabhupada said, loan it here. Grant it here. Start the temples. You know? So the service was, you know, the book distribution service was perfect. It was giving out the books. The money's coming in, going, start the temples, ever expanding. Perfect. None of that material stuff was being, you know, because Prabhupada was at the center of it all. But, you know, Prabhupada's not here physically now, and we're also dealing with so many material things. So there's a danger that will undermine the purity of our motivation. We have to be on guard for that. You know. So there's this word simony, which means be careful, you know, don't use sacred things to make money, and for your own sense gratification. Then that you know, then you won't get to what real valuable thing, you know, love of God. As soon as you get into that mood, then the prema is disappearing, and not only the prema, but even the taste, and it becomes all a show. You know, it becomes a show, and Krishna doesn't allow that to go on. So we've had experience that happens. So careful sadhana, meditating on these devotees. We have the association of Prahlad here. You know, all of these devotees are here in the Bhagavatam. Narada Muni, Shukadeva, Prahlad, all of them. They're here to give us their association. Prabhupada has made it possible because he translated everything so nicely, commented wonderfully. And by that association, it helps purify the heart and prevents the material things from coming back in. So there's so much to be said, but I think I'll leave it at that. And I'll just read this translation again. A servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. So if there are any questions or comments, we can entertain them at this time. So Vas Prabhu.
Thank you for a wonderful class.
Hare Krishna, glorious Prabhupada.
Yeah, Prabhuji, you know, we're hearing this prayer from Lord, from Prahlad Maharaj several, but today was especially powerful. But some people may think and say that, you know, he said all these things, but still, he still took the benediction that
becoming the king.
Singhadeva gave him.
Yeah.
He still took the benediction. In other words, he was still the king of the demons. He had a family.
Right.
He had wealth galore, and he took it, and he you know, used it. And also, they may think that, well, being the king of the demons, why would he want to still be the king of the demons? And it appears, I haven't read, but it appears that he didn't really change their minds either. In other words, he didn't, like, change them into, like, pure devotees or even for that matter, any kind of a devotee, they maintained being demons, and he took all these things that he didn't want.
So yeah.
Maybe well, you could expound on that.
That just shows how what a great devotee he was. Just like someone, you know, the temple president for so long. there's so many things that you know, but you're doing it out of duty. I mean, he was ordered to by Nrisimhadev, just like Dhruva. By the time he was, you know, through with his meditation, Svaman Katata Sivadang Nyache. Again, this word varam comes in. My dear Lord, I was situated in penance in Astana Abhilashi in order to get a position, Astana, that's greater than my great-grandfather, Brahma. You know? And that was his motivation when he started. And but then he says, I understand that that position is kacham. That Brahma's position is like broken glass compared to simply seeing you, having you. Now I don't want anything else. But then he still, you know, said, hey, you know, now you got to be the king for 36,000 years. Okay, you know. And so you do it out of duty, just like Priyavrata also did it out of duty. So it's a thankless task, really, because it's true that, you know, apparently you're right. I never thought of that. That, yeah, it's still the race of demons are there. And Bali, you know, his grandson, he also had to deal with that, you know. But that's a thankless test. Sometimes the leader, you know, people are so incorrigible, you know, that they won't change. So, but Prahlad, he, you know, performed his duty. And in a sense, that's more of a sign of love, you know, when you take on something that's so difficult and something you don't want, but that's necessary. It's necessary, you know, because if Hiranyakashipu had stayed, you know, then, the king, then, all the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas would have been suppressed and repressed continually. That's what was going on. So yes, the kingdom of the demons may have, you know, remained because there's always going to be asuras around. But, you know, certainly he wasn't doing what Hiranyakashipu was doing. You know, he was some other, it's not too much about his administration here. But the idea is that, you know, to take on a service, just like in Prabhupada, you know, all the trouble he took, you know, in order to, you know, start this movement and then run the movement. He was always begging, please take the management. It's the management, the headaches, because you're dealing with so many factors that don't have something to do directly with hearing and chanting and, you know, direct, you know. But that's what it takes. The longer view is to the institution, you know, an organization in which people are brought together of varying degrees of purity, you know, to work together for the higher aim of spreading Krishna consciousness, that's a big hassle. It's a big hassle, you know, because there's constantly, you know, you're in the material world, you know. But that's a greater service, as Prabhupada often pointed out. To leave Vrindavan, to come to America, you know, to deal with the hippies and the bums and the Bowery, you know. And then not only that, but as time went on, there was always some crisis coming. You know, this sannyasi is leaving, and what's happening over here? Someone stole the money, you know, and whatever. You know, you read the Prabhupada's life, you know. And yet, for the greater good, you know, that the institution will remain and go on, that, you know, Prabhupada took that on. And the same thing is true of the whole universe. I mean, how, you know, if you just walk off, who is that Anga? You know, then Vena comes up. You know, somebody's ready to take charge. So in order to fill that post with a devotee for the benefit of the people in general, then that devotee takes it on. So that's what Prahlad did. But just like Sudama, you know, he was never tempted to try to get into the enjoying mood. Certainly at this point, you can see. Anyone else? Babu?
I was going to say thank you for the nice class, Prabhu. And I forget how many generations forward and back are liberated anyway for...
I think I read ahead. I think it's 21.
21?
If I recall back, yeah, and forward, yeah.
So really, he didn't really have to make any devotees. They were already...
No, but these are his direct descendants.
Oh, okay.
It's not just his... it's not everybody, you know. But what's interesting to me is how do they get, you know, liberated back? Because they may already be in their next bodies, or, you know. And the only thing I could come up with is that, well, they're related to Prahlad, you know, some way, he's a descendant. and that he's aware of them. You know, he also is thinking of them. And the future generations, you know, they're related to him, like Bali and even Banasura. You know, Banasura was a descendant. Now he had to go through some problems, but he wasn't killed. You know, he was eventually purified. So they're also aware of Prahlad. So the thing is that either Prahlad is aware of them or thinking of them. Just like we all have our parents, right? Some of them are alive, some not. And, you know, I think of my, this is a long time ago, you know, both of my parents have passed on. But I think of them favorably, you know, especially with, you know, in the early days when they were taking care of me. I came from the family was together. I wasn't abused, you know, and they, you know, took, so there's some good feeling for them. Now, maybe, you know, whatever merits I have in devotional service that can help them, you know, and more directly, you know, we try to help our parents, you know, give them the prasadam, or my mother had a subscription to BTG, you know, whatever, you know. So this is how, you know, they're delivered. And, we have to realize that the best thing we can do for our family, you know, or anybody who knows us, is to become better devotees. And they may not understand how. They usually understand, oh, you're throwing off the family tradition, or, you know, we have such high hopes for you, you know. But it's just out of ignorance. Their greatest asset is that they have somebody in the family who's a Hare Krishna, who's somebody that says, whatever happened to Bob? Oh, he became a Hare Krishna. Boom! They just chanted the holy name. You know? So it's... it's actually all auspicious. You know, any everything we were able to do in Krishna consciousness, pushing on the movement or becoming Krishna conscious, is just auspiciousness for the world. Jaya Kaidava Chandrika Avadananam. It's the expanding the white lotus of good fortune. Thank you very much. All glories for Srila Prabhupada.